Welcome one and all to the big show, the big return show. He's back. Brett Ehrlich returning triumphant from Japan.
Liz, I shouldn't be on the show today, John. I feel like I feel like I'm sick.
You probably are sick. Are you sick? Because that would explain the feeling.
I'm sick. My wife is sicker.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, there's no way I'm going to miss out on this. I've been up.
Sorry.
So I've been awake since, I want to say, 7:30 last night.
So you're basically, Japan obviously has a very different time zone. So you have not recovered in several days.
No, I did. Then I got sick. And now it's just an inability to like fall asleep comfortably that's really got me. But on the upside, I watched The Social Network last night. I watched The Big Short last night. I watched most of Devil Wears Prada this morning. So I'm ready to go.
That is medicine, I think. Well, that's awesome. I'll recommend Poor Things. I recently watched it with the wife.
Did see.
Quite entertaining. You did see it?
Yeah. Why would I miss that, good. John? There's a lot of nudity in it. Why would I miss it?
There is. Emma Stone was very good. I will agree with the Academy in that. She was very good. But anyway, Brett, you left 2 weeks ago. You left, I think we can all agree, a boy. You return a man. You've been to Japan 5 times or something like that?
11 times.
No, you have not. That is ridiculous. I haven't been to San Diego 11 times.
But, yes, you have.
Then probably. Shut up. It's a joke. You're a comedian. How do you not understand that? But anyway, did you experience anything new?
Yeah, I went to a pig cafe, John, and I bought this shirt that says Kitties. Mm-hmm. Hello, Kitties Club.
Are there cats there?
We are so happy. No, I bought this. Jordan Yule was like, you got to go to this coffee shop. That is a said. I went to a coffee shop on the way there. It was on a hill. So I had to stop and shop. And I found this and it's great. It's my favorite shirt.
That's awesome.
Right now. But I went to a coffee shop, just so you know, the kinds of coffee shops they have that Jordan likes are the kind that are essentially like high class brothels for people who like coffee instead of genitals. They ask like, instead of like, what do you like? It's very much like, hey, what are you into? You like Asians? You like South, you like Latinas? Like, what do you like? Let me get that for you. You want something salty? You want something sweet? You want something a little fruity? Let me hook you up.
In Texas, by the way.
And they make you feel like the most important person in the world. And then you're like,
that's cool.
Yeah, this turns out this is coffee.
Yeah, I had recently discovered on and we'll get to the news in a second. Don't worry. I'd recently discovered on a stream. I was playing Helldivers with Jordan.
Oh, I
had
know
not known that he was obsessed with coffee, that he brings coffee equipment on trips.
Yes.
Which seems mental. I don't
know. He stayed with us once.
Likes coffee.
He makes me feel he like the gamed me. He like nagged me very subtly and politely. But I like in the morning after he got here, I was like, oh, he's serious. I ran out to go get like a kettle.
Yeah.
And like a pour over system.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
But, that's fancy. Yeah. But I did anyway, buy him coffee in Japan.
It's that is very nice.
La Cabra is the name of the bean, which translates to the goat.
The goat? So okay.
It better be the goat of beans.
In any event, one of the reasons I bring up Jordan is that I want to prepare everyone for next week on the show. I'm not going to be here. Got things I've got to do. But Francesca is going to be leading a couple shows. Sharon Reed is going to be leading a couple shows. And Jordan is going to be leading the Friday episode with Brett Ehrlich. So it should be a lot of fun. And everyone definitely tune in throughout the week. If you watch live, please be supportive with your comments and your super chats and all that. It's very difficult to step into the shoes of leading a show that you have not been leading for like 5 straight years. So they're all awesome. They're gonna do an amazing job and I hope you all enjoy it. With that said, we do have a lot to talk about on the show. In the first hour, Bonnie Willis, her future has been revealed. Bernie Sanders trying to make that future a better place perhaps to live in. We're gonna be looking back at the last 4 years. Are we in fact better off than we were? And that's just in the first hour. Coming up in the aftermath, Brett will once again be throwing away garbage people of the year. And Donald Trump's ads have been running before Nazi content on the internet. So that's fun. We'll break all that down and more. But with all that said, Brett, you ready to do this thing? Do you remember how to do this thing?
Whether I am or not, you've been more than fair.
You see, remember that part. Okay, well, that's something. With that, let's launch into this. Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis and her office can remain in charge of the Georgia investigation into Donald Trump and his co-conspirators' efforts to allegedly overturn the results of the 2020 Georgia election. But other changes will need to be made. Now, obviously, there's that investigation and there's the spinoff investigation, which isn't as good as most spinoffs aren't, into whether Fani Willis had been biased or corrupt in her investigation into Donald Trump and his nearly 20 co-conspirators. So Judge Scott McAfee has been looking into this. We've had weeks of testimony. It's been very contentious and dramatic at times. And the end result is also kind of contentious and a little bit dramatic. So we're gonna dive into it. So he said that he found, quote, the appearance of impropriety, but ruled that the relationship between her and Wade, the special investigator there, brought no actual conflict of interest and denied the defendant's claims and requests. So basically, it doesn't look good, and he's got a lot of other criticisms to make of Fani Willis, but it's not what those who'd been trying to use this to derail the investigation or to punt Fani Willis or the entire case from being investigated. It's not that, is what he's saying. Now, he does say that either Willis or Wade will have to leave the case for it to continue, which I think in practice means that Wade needs to leave the case, because it would be, I think, a little bit weird if Wade were to stay on and Fani Willis were to leave, but I guess anything is possible. And I want you all to remember that Willis throughout this has strongly denied claims that her relationship with the special prosecutor here tainted the proceedings or created any financial or ethical conflict of interest of any kind. But that said, I want to give you a little bit more from the judge. He said that his decision should not indicate that the court supports Willis's, quote, tremendous lapse in judgment or what he called her unprofessional manner during tense testimony. Rather, it is the undersigned's opinion that Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices, even repeatedly. Okay, so he says, I may not like it, you may not like it, but that doesn't make it illegal and it doesn't mean that there's an actual conflict of interest here. That has not actually been demonstrated. Bad choices perhaps have been demonstrated, but not an actual conflict. And in response to this, Trump lawyer Steve Sadow said that the ruling, quote, did not afford appropriate significance to what the court heard about Willis and Wade's relationship and their conduct. Quote, we will use all legal options available as we continue to fight to end this case, which should never have been brought in the first place. Basically, did not afford appropriate significance to, as Trump said, the fact that he's her lover. We can't have the lovers investigating. That's not a crime though. So the judge, I think, makes sense in a lot of this. We're gonna get into more of it, but Brett, what do you think?
Trump's motivation for trying to get Fani Willis kicked off the case has nothing to do with anything except he just doesn't want to be in a case. It has nothing to do with whether what she did affects the whether like justice is being served. He doesn't want justice to be served. Every time in the past when justice has been served, he's had to pay $500 million more. And so he wants to stop that. So there's no way that people who are fighting for Trump are acting in good faith when they're saying Fani Willis get off the case. I think she should get off the case. I think if you're a good DA, then you should not put your own pride out there and hubris to get you to be the person in front of the camera. I think it would be better for the case if she left him on it. That would signal, I chose the best person for it, not my boyfriend. And you know, the timeline, as you pointed out last time, like they were boyfriend, girlfriend after, it seems. But she needs to get away from this case immediately.
But obviously there are significant consequences, not just to her, if she does that. If she leaves, that potentially derails the investigation for months. I mean, could actually lead to it.
Well, I just don't, I think I mean, usually the district attorney does not try the case. Like I live in Los Angeles where the district attorney has never tried a case in his whole goddamn life. Like they're politicians. They try to say what the main thrusts of what they're doing in their district are. They have actual lawyers that prosecute a case. She should get the hell out of there, is my opinion. And it's the only thing optically that makes sense to me, especially given how she conducted herself when they asked her questions about it. That's something the judge even pointed out.
We're gonna turn to that in just a sec. I will only say that there are a lot of people, I think, who might agree with you that in some forms of her conduct that it was obviously not optimal, but that theoretically she's less important than the charges and the investigation. And if the investigation potentially could disappear without her, it's better to have her and the investigation than perhaps neither.
But that's not how anything works.
No, I don't think that's how it should work, but that is according to the people who, it might be how it works though in practice. There was never any reason why if all of a sudden she could no longer be involved, the case should go away. But from the very beginning, serious observers of this have said that that is a very real possibility. It doesn't make any sense to reasonable people, but that is apparently the way that it actually works.
No, but those two are close, right? Like those two are close, and that's kind of what the judge says. Like, you guys are pretty close. This is improper for both of you to stay on there. And my take is that like her wishes are his wishes. It's fine. This is very like English almost, and like it just seems improper. Please step away from the case. And then you go and do the same thing. Like, I think she needs to get away from the case. It's my opinion.
Okay.
Well, I mean, she doesn't have to. Obviously, the judge is like him or her go away, but like. It just sounds like he's gonna stay on it. It's not like he's gonna abandon ship on what happens next. Mm-hmm. Like it's his decisions that got us here as well.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, this almost seems like if you had like a legal drama with a romance subplot, like having to make this choice. I think that's it's a cool like season closing decision, but obviously very consequential, you know, maybe for the fate of democracy. So I like it when shows have high stakes.
Even though she's gonna stay on the case, all of this, especially this language from the judge, and we're just skimming the opinion right now, I'm sure there's likely more, it's really a gift to former President Trump and his co-defendants, because they're not only going to fight this case on the merits, they fight it in the court of public opinion. Optics here matter. He has tried to undermine trust in the justice system, and if you have a judge who's overseeing a case, calling the prosecutor, again, unprofessional, saying that she made a bad decision, she had a lapse in judgment. And that is a lot of ammunition for the former president and his co-defendants.
So look, I think that Paula Reid is 100% right there that they will try to fight this out in the court of public opinion. It shouldn't matter at all to any reasonable observer. It'll be very reassuring to the MAGA world if you could just focus on Fannie Willis being bad or something. It doesn't have anything to do with whether he solicited, you know, a public official to violate their oath of office or something. But I want to talk a little bit about that ammunition that was alluded to there. So here is another senior legal analyst for CNN discussing some of the, I guess, the most noteworthy comments made by the judge in this report.
First of all, there's a quote, significant appearance of impropriety that infects the prosecution team. Second, a tremendous lack in judgment. Third, the unprofessional manner of the DA's testimony. Fourth, the odor of mendacity remains. I Googled mendacity. It means lying.
Fifth, already new order. That's
fifth, the legally improper speech that was made in the church that Laura just talked about, legally improper with the effect to cast racial aspersions on the defendants. Sixth, the DA has created dangerous waters for the DA to wade further into. And finally, and I think this is the most damning, there are reasonable questions about whether the DA testified untruthfully. Any one of these statements by a judge would be a career ender for a normal prosecutor to have an on the record finding that there are reasonable questions about whether you lied under oath. That would be devastating. And we'll see what the political effects will be. The bottom line, the DA survives, but not without serious bruising, to use your analogy, Sarah.
It's bruising and, you know, some hyperbolic language. The odor of mendacity, which I think is one of the colognes that Trump released with his sneakers. But
get him, John.
But anyway, boom. Now, anyway, Brett, what do you think about that? I assume you largely agree?
I largely agree. I don't think that there are any DAs out there right now in major cities in America who are like that basic public servant that used to be in the DA. But like, and most of America was like, we need to get rid of the quiet public servant and replace them with someone who's going to do stuff. And that's what America said by and large. So I'm not like arguing against people like Fannie Willis being out there. I just think that like, I don't think she's going to step away. My read on her, especially after seeing her testify on her own behalf, is just like, all right, God, I just wish we had normal lawyers doing normal lawyer things and doing normal prosecutions so we could go and say, All right, here's a normal conclusion to that case. I think that a lot of the analysis we just saw is super dumb. I think it's like, but this happens in the court of public opinion. Yeah, but that sure, but that doesn't affect anything. It happens in the court of the court. So, well, you know, a lot of this bloviating by the judge himself too, McAfee, is like, you're the owner of Medacity. It's like, all right, calm down, buddy. You just, you know, get out of your, you know, blowing smoke up your tunic or your robe or whatever.
Blowing odor, actually, is
blowing odor out your judge's robe. But like, blowing I think that she hasn't really handled herself very well throughout this. It is, and I feel like it might be, you know, interpreted from what I'm saying that like I am saying it's easy for her to walk the line on this. It is wildly impossible. She's held to super duper high standards.
100%.
Unfair at many turns. That said, like she didn't walk the line. I think she needs to get herself away. Now it might result in like completely new people in there, but I don't think it has to, but I think she's going to stay and she's going to push through it because I think at the end of the day, a lot of district attorneys, it's about them more than it is about the case itself. And look, I mean, that's the one, not me taking Trump's side by any means. I think everybody in this story sucks farts.
Yeah, for me, I want to be able to go back to largely not caring about any of the figures involved in this other than those who are being investigated for trying to overturn the results of the election. That would be my preference. And tied to that is my preference that the voters, particularly in Georgia, which is like a swingish state, at least in Senate races recently, should know what happened. And I think they should be allowed to know what happened more than a couple of days before the election. That's the most important thing to me. And that technically looks like it could still happen. We will see. And we will see what sort of attack. By the way, they tried to take her down with this. Does anyone think that this is like the last thing they'll use? This might be the last thing that they have, but they're certainly going to try. So everyone stay tuned for that. And in terms of there was the conversation there about sort of her career going forward outside of this. I would imagine that this is probably going to hurt her, at least in her position as DA. I mean, maybe hypothetically it could help her like in, you know, some sort of electoral run outside of that. But yeah, I do imagine that for better or worse, whether you agree with all of those statements that are made by the judge, you know, coming out of it, it is going to be a little bit more difficult for her, I think.
I don't think this, I don't think anyone's opinion of Donald Trump or Fani Willis is greatly helped or hurt by this.
Okay.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are, you know, they are who we thought they were. They are, they're going to keep their opinion. I think there's certain people that are going to stay away. But if you're Fani Willis, there are still tons of career paths for you. You don't got to worry too much about it. You're going to be on television. If it worse comes to worse, you're going to be on Fox. You're going to be on a CNN.
Yeah, you might have a CNN show, actually. Ever since it was revealed that the FBI witness who formed the basis of the GOP's effort to impeach Joe Biden over Burisma and Ukraine, ever since it was revealed that that was like a whole big bag of lies, I think a lot of people have been wondering why. Why is it that this person, Alexander Smirnov, lied in an attempt to, I guess, get Joe Biden? And there's a lot of different theories as to why. So there's already been, you know, stated these allegations that he's connected to Russian intelligence. So some people believe that that's probably the explanatory thing. Maybe that's why he made these claims. But there's new reporting from The Guardian that hints at another possibility. And it is annoyingly complicated, but at its core, apparently, Alexander Smirnov was paid $600,000 by an American company that has connections to a UK company owned by Donald Trump business associates in Dubai. And that payment came the year of, but before the lies began, the claims that were made about Joe Biden, Ukraine, and Burisma. And you'll have to bear with me as we try to walk through this. That chart looks vaguely Pepe Silvia-ish. I agree. But that's the path that the money took effectively. And look, at one point we had prepared, and I want you all to look at the Guardian report. There is a mess of names and a mess of companies here and, you know, meetings with the Trump family and donations to Trump and all that and a whole bunch of people. I decided I'm not going to run through all of that because I wouldn't remember it at the end of it. I think there's no reason why you would either. But the basic claim is that that money appears to have gone to this guy from people that had a vested interest in Donald Trump Getting back into office. Of course, all of this is coming in the wake of the 2020 election, during a time in which there were a lot of people on the right that thought that not only would Donald Trump become president in 2024, but that if they could reveal that the election was fraudulent, that he could instantly get back into office. Now, we do have to be fair. They say, not the named people in this, they are not responding to any questions for comment from The Guardian, but an unnamed former business associate told The Wall Street Journal that that payment was, quote, in exchange for a stake in an Israel-based crypto trading platform called Bit of Trade that Smirnov was working on launching. And all of that sounds even shadier than the stuff we were just talking about, having to do with crypto and all that. That could be a legitimate reason for this transfer of funds. And honestly, I hate even covering something like this, because when you have a chart of all the connections, I just start thinking of Glenn Beck and his like blackboard or whatever. But the claims were false. The claims were immediately picked up by the right. It is not impossible that something illicit or corrupt, not even necessarily attached to James Comer or Jim Jordan or any of them, they don't have to have been involved in literally any of this. So maybe they leaned on the guy. Maybe they provided a financial incentive. I don't know. Brett, what do you think?
Listen, the guy lied. And that was the story. That was the takeaway from a while ago. And do you think that anyone at Fox News is really backing off of that? No, they're going to just repeat this nonsense over and over and over again. I don't think it's too complicated to have that workflow or that flow of cash and who these players are and how they're connected to Donald Trump. Like, that has gotten people kicked off of stuff before. That trail of money is what a lot of us who watch certain true crime docs live for. and that's not a room full of string and safety pins and thumbtacks. That is like a few steps. And sure, that is exactly what it is. Now, even without all those steps, I love this. Like, why would someone lie on Donald Trump's behalf? I can point to 6,000 people on television right now who are doing it for financial benefit, none of which are as explicitly tied to Donald Trump associates as this. A lot of it is just like, it sounds like the dominant strategy for my career right now is to help the guy in charge of one of the two major parties in America. This stuff is just super fun. And it's just, every time they tell you how ridiculous it is that like Hunter Biden did coke off a different surface or body part, you can counter it with like, this is more ridiculous that like there's a bunch of people going through like Israeli Bitcoin companies to pay off a guy who's lying on Trump's behalf in jail.
Yeah. And he is in jail. I'm glad that you pointed that out, because I want to let people know that the jury trial for Alexander Smirnov is coming up in April. Maybe coming out of that, there will be more information. Maybe at some point he could reveal things as part of some sort of settlement. I don't know. I think that would be dramatic. Also, I will leave you with a fun little possibility. So he's been arrested. He's going to have the jury trial. Theoretically, he could face legal consequences that in theory could be vacated by a future president like Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been perfectly willing to pardon those who have gotten involved in his legal stuff, have intimidated witnesses and lied for him before. It seems crazy that he would pardon Alexander Smirnov, but does anyone think that it's 100% not going to happen? Anyway, just another fun little nugget to look forward to if Donald Trump becomes president.
It seems like Fox Business, it seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more, pay their workers.
Really? Is that what you think?
pay their workers.
Excuse me.
I didn't get to ask a question.
Okay, thank you.
Senator,
you want to hold it? Okay. We held a hearing on a 32-hour work week because what we have seen is that over the last 50 years, despite a huge increase in worker productivity, almost all of the new wealth has gone to the top 1%, while 60% of the people are living paycheck to paycheck. Many of our people are exhausted. We work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world. I think it's time for a shortened work week.
Could I ask you a question about that? It seems like Democrats want businesses to be taxed more,
pay their
workers more, lower prices, and now pay people not not to work.
You know what I would like to see?
How are businesses going to survive that? That's the question. How can businesses survive all of those proposals?
When Mr. Bezos pays an effective tax rate lower than the average worker, I think we have a real problem in our tax system. I think that billionaires have got to start paying their fair share of taxes. Thank you.
Okay, so I have to say, first off, I miss Bernie Sanders. I know he hasn't gone away, but I miss hearing, you know, people actually willing to criticize those who have the most in society. I mean, you have Fox and Fox Business, which occasionally cosplays as being against the elites or something, but you can see they're incredibly defensive towards corporations that have received massive benefits, you know, since the founding of America. And so that is Bernie Sanders and Fox Business Network's Hillary Vaughn, who wanted to ask a question. That's all. She wasn't trying to make a point. She just wanted information from him. So I understand Bernie Sanders' frustration, because she's just doing propaganda and then like kind of asking a question at the end. So Bernie Sanders is proposing a shorter work week. We have a 40-hour work week, which we've had for decades and decades and decades and decades, okay? Ever since the last truly successful labor movement got us the weekend and got us the protections that we have. So he has the crazy radical idea that after nearly 100 years of productivity gains, maybe someday we could work a little bit less than we do now. And Fox News, you know, the populist movement, you know, the voice of the working person, is here to immediately say, how dare you? Never will we toil less. In fact, we'll toil more. How are businesses supposed to serve? I mean, I know they have record profits. I know they're doing amazingly coming out of the pandemic, but you want them to pay people more. You want them to be taxed more. As Bernie Sanders points out, and we'll get to the numbers eventually, many of the most successful corporations in the country pay negative taxes. They receive money from the government rather than paying into it. I think that they'll probably be okay paying 5% or 10% or whatever laughably low tax rate we would be able to get. That's not even what Bernie Sanders is calling for right now. He's just talking about the possibility that we could switch over to a shorter work week, which many, many experiments and examples from in the United States and around the world have already shown benefits workers, and the corporations tend to maintain those systems after the trial period, implying that it does not devastate the businesses. But Brett, I want your thoughts about that little interaction.
Yeah, the word businesses is used the dumbest way possible in that question. And I think it's used the dumbest way possible generally. Like, saying businesses is like saying people. Like, we already distinguish in our tax code people who make more and people who make less. When Bernie Sanders is talking businesses, he's talking about major corporations that are benefiting from socialism that benefits the rich. Huge tax cuts, lobbyist leverage that they get to carve out special favors for them. When Fox Business is cosplaying and they talk about how are businesses gonna survive, they're advocating on behalf of large businesses and pretending to advocate on behalf of small businesses. Mm-hmm. But these things with 40-hour work weeks changing, like small businesses, I think a lot of people on the left generally ignore how hard it is to have a small business. And you wanna know that people who understand the difference between a large business and a small business, ask a small business owner, they're gonna say a lot of stuff very similar to people who are working like in the labor market, right? That's something that I think really is where the conversation just disintegrates. The most inroads I have with conservatives when I talk to them, conservatives that don't work for mega corporations that run their own small businesses, is exactly this. Is like, yeah, giant corporations, the mega rich, the mega wealthy, have such a leg up on literally everybody else. And we can all work together to make them pay their fair share. Because the people who are mad at Amazon are the workers peeing into bottles. And on the other hand, you have the small mom and pop shops who can't do business because they're getting elbowed out by the same people. Yeah. That's the common ground that the Fox Business person isn't going to let Bernie talk and find.
Exactly. Yeah, and look, I'm glad that you made that distinction. Bernie clearly is, I mean, he specifically talks about Jeff Bezos. Like, he is focused on these massive corporations. It just, for me, like, I love that interaction, because I think I posted on Threads about this. I talked about it in the pre-port yesterday. There was an extended period of TDR where we were recurringly talking about 4-day work weeks and, you know, like, trying to advocate for those who dare to dream of a future that's 3% better than it is today. And I always say, you get nuked from orbit if you bring up the possibility. And not just from Fox Business. Everybody seems to agree that we got a weekend, we got the 8-hour workday, generally, not for everybody, and that's it. It should never be better than that. We will never work less. Like, we're talking about a time, there weren't computers. There weren't phones. There weren't, like, not cell phones anyway. There wasn't any of this. Robots, AI, none of that existed. We develop all of that. You still have to work the exact same number of hours. Why? Why should your kids and your grandkids work the same number of hours? Why should they have to wait as long to retire? And that's why I want to tie it into the stuff the right has been talking about. I understand there probably aren't a lot of conservatives that are watching this. But if you are, I know that you think deep down to your bones that these people give a damn about you. But why is it that they only get fired up to stop proposals that would benefit working people? In defense, as you saw, of massive corporations there. Why is Ben Shapiro talking about raising the retirement age or advocating for his workers to never retire? Why is Matt Walsh talking about killing Social Security? How are these things that are supposed to benefit you? It certainly seems like they benefit those who already are mega wealthy, who already have so much money that it no longer even reads as a real thing. It's just a fantastical pile of gold coins. And for some reason, they maintain this myth, this fiction that they're populist. I don't get it, Brett. Any other thoughts?
Yeah. This, when we talk about capitalism and what's wrong with it, when I talk about, I'm not gonna put it on anyone else, when I talk about what's wrong with capitalism, I'm talking about like the financialization of industries in the economy. And so a lot of the extra money that we're talking about, where does it go? I'm more productive as a worker and we're creating more money for the company, but they can't pay me more. Where does it go? It goes to these investors and that part of like the actual capital C capitalism portion of it. And that's very, like, when people say, oh, you got to pay a higher tax rate, my question is like, what is Jeff Bezos' tax going to go toward? No, that's going to disappear. It's going to go to, the money comes into the government, it's going to go to defense contractors. That's stupid. I think we need to regulate certain financial aspects of industry. And we can vary the same way that we have different tiers in our tax code. Now, we can apply different tiers to the limitations on how much profit can go back to shareholders. Because that's where it goes. That's where it gets really, really horrible. And that's the vampire that's just sucking money out of companies.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I disagree a little bit about some of the stuff about not particularly caring if they paid taxes. Because for any individual corporation or person, it might not be that much. But obviously, when all of them are evading it, that's a huge amount of money that theoretically doesn't have to go to defense contractors.
But where does it go? How, like, that? There's never really a. You can't really earmark that stuff.
No. You're not directly earmark it. Well, I mean, hypothetically, in some of the bills, they try to. But I'm saying that you have to theoretically. The claims about the rising deficit and the national debt are often used to cut programs. Theoretically, if you're bringing in more money, that would be less of a pressure. That could even be used as a smokescreen to advocate for those cuts.
My thing is, no normal person. Rick Strom's definitely not watching the show right now because he just called me. The normal person is like. Like, I get it when I'm like, tax that bastard. Mm-hmm. But that money, then most people, the next step is like, where does it go? How does it benefit me better? It benefits me better in my pocket, not going into the government and coming back never. I'm talking about how to messaging wise connect the dots. That's why I think the better success is going to be
Bernie,
in regulation.
Sure, I would say that very often in Bernie's speeches, he does connect those dots. He talks about those who are sort of getting away with financial murder and the status quo. And then he talks about all the things that we could do with that money. Obviously, it might be a somewhat abstract or indirect relationship. And not everybody makes those linkages, but I think that Bernie Sanders typically does.
Democrats will call Republicans racist, sexist, xenophobic, homophobic, Islamophobic, transphobic, that want dirty air and water. In other words, Democrats are using fear and division to mask what has been a terrible 4 years under Biden. I repeat, they cannot run on are you better off than you were 4 years ago. This is all they have left. They don't really care about democracy or freedom or your rights as an American. No, they prefer one party rule where Republicans are completely powerless and then if they want to punish them and use the Justice Department to go after them.
There's a lot of madness in there. First of all, like, one of the core issues of the election is about trying to restore people's rights that were stripped away by the conservative Supreme Court appointed by Donald Trump. So not caring about rights, not really understanding that. Also, I love the idea that the right would never run on fear and division. How them caravans doing, Sean Hannity? such a ridiculous, farcical, claim to be made. But let's pretend that he's not a buffoon. He's not a dumb hack donkey. Let's pretend that that's serious. The Democrats won't run on, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? So that is a claim that is being made that I don't think matches up with what Biden is talking about. Biden very much is trying to make the case that people are better off than they were 4 years ago. Sean Hannity may not be covering that. He may be ignoring that that's happening, but he is trying to do that. That said, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily true. Maybe people aren't better off than they were 4 years ago. So we thought we on TDR will dive into the evidence and try to figure out if people are better off. Now, there's a reason that Hannity is talking about this, because what people think about the economy has not yet recovered from 4 years ago. So if you take a look at this chart, this is US economic confidence, and you can see that it absolutely nosedives during 2020. Now, that would seem to be a massive indictment of Republican rule, because obviously that happened on the watch of a Republican. Sean Hannity doesn't care about that. Now, it did start to go up, thankfully, in the early years of the Biden administration. They passed some bills to try to stimulate the economy, try to help keep people whole, and you could see that that had an effect in consumer sentiment. I would remind Sean Hannity that he opposed literally all of that. But it still, in the last 4 years, has not recovered to where it was at before the pandemic. It is still tough times. Now, we can see that over time, US economic growth in terms of the GDP has been growing once again. You'd had this big dip during the pandemic. That has thankfully moved up. You also had this period where inflation was outpacing the growth of wages. We are now thankfully out of that, and wage growth is now is moving up faster than inflation. So that is good news for people. It doesn't mean that people are necessarily feeling that, and they might still be mad about the previous growth in prices, even if they're not continuing to go up that much. But you can see that in terms of unemployment, there was a big spike, you know, during the pandemic, which was horribly mismanaged by the Republicans. But it is now moving very much in the right direction. Once again, we've had like the greatest sustained lowest rate of unemployment in the last like half century, if not more. And to use terms that the Republicans generally seem to care about, the stock market has hit all new all-time highs under Joe Biden. You can see it continuing to creep up. It had taken a dip, as everything else did during the pandemic, and there's been a lot of growth. Now, that said, that doesn't mean that everything is rosy. Credit card debt in the American public is very, very high. That's a major concern. You can see that the average sale price of houses has had some progress over the last 2 years or so, but it is still very high. And we have to bear in mind that interest rates are higher than they were several years ago. So there are still things to be concerned about, but there's also good news. And importantly, Sean Hannity, who is going to make those claims about Biden running on hate and division, not wanting to talk about the economy, he is not going to dive into any of that. Maybe the negative stuff. I think his audience would fall asleep if he did that. He's certainly not going to give credit to Biden or the Democrats for weathering the storm to the extent that they have. And when you compare it to other Western nations, we've done pretty damn well coming out of the pandemic in comparison to many of them. What do you think, Brett?
What you just saw from Sean Hannity is a very Mortal Kombat type of political messaging, specifically Ehonda's thousand hand slap. It is just this. It's everything. Here's everything that you could possibly be upset about. And it's all contradictory. It's all coming from, like, there's no way that can come from one man's hand. No, it is supernatural. He is from another planet. And that is, this is a political messaging discussion. This is not an economic fundamentals discussion. Let me put it this way. How do people on the left feel when people living in cities say they feel less safe? You say, well, the crime rate's actually down. Well, what do you do to someone who's feeling bad? Similarly, the unemployment rate's low. Why do you feel about the economy? Say that to someone who doesn't have a job, or someone who's just feeling bad. Take the economics, take the politics out of it. Your boyfriend is feeling terrible. Do you just show up and say things aren't so bad? Your girlfriend, whoever, it's tough to change how someone feels about how things are happening. And to talk about the specifics of the thing that's driving them nuts right now is difficult to as a tactic to get that, like, well, let's dig into what's wrong with you and how your feelings are not valid. Yeah. You hate the person who does that. That's what that's a trap of political communication. Mm-hmm. What Hannity's doing is the actual dominant strategy in political messaging. It's just to open up some fronts that you think you can win on. That is politics 101. They say, if you don't like the conversation, change it. If you go in and you engage Hannity on every one of the points he made, be like, well, actually, you shouldn't be sad and you're crazy for feeling sad. You're gonna anger some folks. So what Biden needs to do is just focus on other stuff and just start a completely new conversation. It can be similar to what he's saying, but you can't just go like, you should, hey, dear, you shouldn't feel bad. You're kind of crazy for feeling bad.
Yeah, look, I get in what I would consider to be kind of an extreme fantasy land version of how that back and forth would go. I think that you are right. I think that in the metaphorical version of directly addressing a single person's concerns, I agree. But I don't agree that we should just allow them to spread fact-free claims that have had the effect of causing people to be depressed outside of the actual facts. Like the people are freaked out about migrant crime. Like we cannot pretend that the fact that the media is like, oh, I guess that's a story now. So anything that seems to fit into that rubric they put on the front page, that is affecting people. It's not to say that there isn't any crime or that if it actually affects people, they shouldn't be affected by it. But if they're reading all of those headlines, that is gonna cause many people to believe something that doesn't necessarily bear on their day-to-day lives. And we can't just not confront that, not talk about it. I think Biden's talk about the economy during the State of the Union, I think, was pretty good. It's not gonna directly refute one person's lived experience. I don't even know how that would work. But I don't think that you can allow the other side to be the only ones that are talking about these areas.
I don't think I disagree with you largely. I think it's more, it's less like, oh, Hannity, let me go point by point through, like we shouldn't say Hannity, let me go point by point through what you said. It needs to be, the problem arises from a lack of messaging until the State of the Union from Biden and the Democrats. There's just no effective messaging happening. They don't have an argument. A lot of it's very boring. A lot of people are very tired, and specifically they don't know where to engage with people in the media in a way that's effective. Fox knows how. They've got Fox, they've got Daily Wire, they've got all that stuff. The left right now is wildly fragmented, and it's just generally harder to get people to feel good about an incumbent when they're feeling bad about an incumbent.
I agree.
You know, look at the swings in the House in those normal scenarios. I mean, the one thing they have going for them is Trump is the absolute worst, and you just need to remind people about that.
That is true. And that is why I think part of the like talking about, or are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Like everybody always uses that in an election. But what they can't avoid is 4 years ago was 2020, the worst year in the last century. That's what they're trying to run from, and they won't be able to. People are going to be reminded of how terrible Trump was and his stewardship of the economy and the government was 4 years ago.
That's the headwind that Trump has. And you just have to remind people, like, the messaging is going to be like, you want to go back to that?
Exactly. And I don't think a lot of people want to. And finally, I just want to say, skittle about Dragon Brass. I was going to bring up this point, but points out, like, when someone says, are you doing better than you were 4 years ago? Like, I get that as a rhetorical thing. But for him in particular, Sean Hannity has been paid in the last 4 years $100 million. And when we showed you that stock market, do you have any idea how much money he has made under Joe Biden in the stock market of last 4 years? He is doing so well under Joe Biden. And obviously that's small solace to conservatives watching Fox News. But God damn, is he doing better under Joe Biden. A Donald Trump endorsed Senate candidate is now blaming a former intern for an apparently nearly decade and a half old prank that resulted in his profile, his email being linked to an adult profile seeking, quote, young guys to have fun with. So this is the individual, it's Bernie Marino, who is currently in the last days of a Republican primary. So his work email was apparently used to register an account on Adult Friend Finder in 2008, which sought, quote, men for one-on-one sex. Quote, hi, looking for young guys to have fun with while traveling. Okay, so records were released via data breach and revealed that his work email was used for that. So he responded very strongly to these allegations. It's a sick last minute attack by desperate people. This is what they do. Look at what they did to Judge Kavanaugh. Look at what they did to President Trump. But Judge Kavanaugh didn't suffer any consequences whatsoever for the major allegations made against him. So that's an interesting comparison to make here. And when he claims it's a last minute attack by desperate people, the claim is they're trying to sink his candidacy. And I have, I think, a very devastating piece of counter evidence to that idea. Stick around for that. But first, here's the evidence. So the username of the account on Adult Friend Finder is Nardo19672. That references his first name, Bernardo, and his birth year of 1967. The records also reportedly listed his real date of birth, as well as geolocation data, which quote indicates that the account was set up for use in a part of Fort Lauderdale where property records show Marino's parents owned a home at the time. While the AP confirmed that someone with access to the email account created the profile, they couldn't obviously determine whether it was created by himself. And importantly, his lawyer says that an intern had created the account as part of a juvenile prank and even provided a statement allegedly written by the former intern taking responsibility saying, quote, "I am thoroughly embarrassed by an aborted prank I pulled on my friend and former boss Bernie Marino nearly two decades ago." The issue is that the AP has been unable to authenticate the statement or get in contact with the intern who might or might not exist. But anyway, the other thing lurking in his background is that Marino had previously made incredibly anti-Trump comments that he has since cleansed from his social media past, including saying, "There's no scenario in which I would support Trump, who he accused of stoking hatred and fear and exploiting people's worst emotions." I don't know if one of those worst emotions is like thirsty ass political ambition, but he appears to be suffering from it because we found a way that he would support Trump. He's accepted the guy's endorsement. And in fact, when you go to his website, that's the first thing that pops up. So anyway, look, none of this should necessarily matter, but we all understand the hypocrisy on these topics that comes from the right. Their demonization of the LGBTQ community. That's the main form that their current, you know, waging of the culture war comes in. And so it's interesting. Do you buy their intern thing, Brett? What do you think?
I buy it. One thing I really care about when it comes to Fonnie Willis, when it comes to this, I really care about who's sleeping with who and who wants to have fun with people. I really want all that. That's one of my main priorities with it. I think this is hilarious. And I'm, you know, there are very few scenarios where Bernie Moreno is winning in the polling to become the next senator from the state of Ohio. Yeah. So I will enjoy it in that context. I love it. I just don't think that anyone is necessarily that. I don't care if he's doing these things. I love looking at it through the specter of like the shame it brings the Republican Party and how they're gonna have to be in this weird position where they defend Trump and like think, you know, they're like, "Oh, leave him alone for whatever sex story's going on." It's like, it makes me very, very happy. I mean, it's entertaining to me. That's where I'm at with it.
What is entertaining to me is like, I don't know if it's true. It's entirely possible an intern did it. That's weird. I don't know. That seems like a lot of work to go to for a prank. What was the prank? It just seems weird.
I think it's a very basic prank.
But like, did he know that it happened at the time? I don't get, why are you doing it? Why is that supposed to be funny?
Anyway, I love that I'm going to know at some point. Is that weird?
What do you mean you're gonna, how are you gonna know?
At some point, like I didn't know, Carlos Danger, I know whose wiener that was.
Oh, that's what you think eventually it'll come out? Well, yeah. Look.
And then I think part's gonna be so fun. It was like before I watched The Wire, you know?
I just wish, let's pretend that it's true, that he actually made it.
Yeah.
You go to his website and he believes every stupid backwards ass political thing that conservatives do. Maybe he's gay and also an awful conservative and just be that. Like, why do they have to pretend that they're all awful conservatives who are all straight? We swear we're straight or whatever. Like, can gay people be terrible too? Like, can you just provide some representation for terrible, regressive gay people? Like, why do you have to hide it? And again, maybe he's not hiding it. Maybe it's just a prank or whatever. And fundamentally, I don't super care. But what I do want to bring up though is he's like, this is them trying to take down a good man in the last minute. Yeah, but are they? Is that why they're bringing it up? Because I noticed, as many people did, that Democrats spent $2.7 million on ads boosting Moreno in a very Adam Schiffian sort of way. They seem to desperately want you to be the candidate. Why would they be bringing this up to sink you? That would have been a massive waste of money.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Dolan written all over it, bros. Yeah.
And I also just want to remind people of when RFK Jr. had to explain why his TikTok account had left heart eyes on an OnlyFans model on TikTok. That seems like it was actually an intern, but who knows?